You're listening to your community radio station. It's KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Halaiva. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. I'm your host, Paul Massey, Director of Regeneration's Botanical Garden, and on today's show, we'll hear all about the Kilauea Community Agricultural Center with project manager Yoshito Lotz, and delve deeper into arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi, as well as take a look at the amazing plant vetiver. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you, in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building island koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
The Kauai store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kahula. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your aqua hydro soil growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all-natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, and more in their 1,700-square-foot warehouse at Pui Industrial Park, Lihue. Family-owned and operated. Open Monday through Saturday, 246-4769, 246-GROW.
And thanks so much to our generous underwriters. We're excited to have Garden Island Hydro back on as an underwriter and appreciate all the assistance that they give to people to grow things hydroponically and nutrient rich. And we want to thank as well KKCR, the listeners, all the friends out there tuning in and paying attention to the information that we're grateful to share with you. And we have a feature packed show today, so we'll get started in right away, but we want to let you know that we have a great in-studio guest. We have a call-in guest coming in, and it's going to be a great show. So settle on back, and let's dive into our celestial session, our look to the heavenly skies above for inspiration and guidance on our planting, harvesting, and other gardening and farming activities. And today's Hawaiian moon we'll begin with, thanks to the U.S. Naval Observatory for precise setting, rising times, and all that sort of thing. The Hawaiian moon today, based on the start of the Hawaiian moon month about a week ago, Ole Kukolu. Ole Kukolu will rise over Kauai at 2:30 p.m. this afternoon. She'll reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 9:15 p.m., and she'll set at 3:59 a.m. Thursday morning. 77% of the moon's beautiful face is illuminated, and we have the full moon coming up next Monday, February 22nd, at 8:20 in the morning, precisely. Ole Kukolu is the third of four Ole moons in the first week of the Hawaiian moon month. And planting recommendations, well, there are none. The Ole moons are considered unproductive, so this is a better time for weeding, compost making, and basically tidying up all those projects on the farms that got half done and maybe need our attention. We're having a return to beautiful sunny weather here on the North Shore. So after some drenching rains that we desperately needed, it's time now to make sure all of those containers that are now holding water are not going to be breeding mosquitoes. And unless you happen to have animals that appreciate eating mosquitoes, and we have exciting news that we were finally able to introduce Muscovy ducks to the Kauai Food Forest. Just a couple of days ago, Krista and I were grateful to go down and visit Mark and his family in Kekaha, who we understand has been a big source of Muscovy ducks for people all over. It turns out that they reproduce prolifically, and so we were very fortunate to bring some ducks up to the farm. And they're getting settled in. Sightings have been seen nearby at the North Shore Dog Park as they settle into their new abode. But boy, did they have a surprise living their whole life in dry Kekaha and then returning for the wettest weather we've had, it seems, in months here on the North Shore. We're turning as well to the biodynamic look at things. This is brought to us again by our dear friend Robin at Heaven on Earth Starts. And so for this week, we are in the descending moon phase, and this signals a good time to be working with the below ground parts of the plant, or rather to say it's a good time for planting in general, in recognition that the energy of the plant at this time of the moon phase is moving in the downward direction. So we're looking at this Wednesday, today, February 17th, Thursday and Friday as well. The moon is in the constellation of Gemini, an air sign, making it a good time to work with our flowering plants. And recommended from Robin is to seed in some mammoth sunflowers. Good to get those in at this time. Other good flowering plants that are productive from a food standpoint, broccoli rob, broccolini, and Guy Lawn, three members of the Brassica family that are cultivated specifically for their flowering tops. And then on Saturday, the moon enters the watery constellation of Cancer, making a good time to work with the leafy plants. Spring greens are on the menu for planting, chards. And very excitingly, Robin has announced that winter boar kale is back on the menu. For listeners or people who have been tracking the news, winter boar kale is the preferred hybrid cultivar of curly kale that experienced a couple of years of near seed unavailability due to black rot fungus that had compromised the seed multiplication efforts of commercial, one commercial operation, given that it is a proprietary hybrid variety. And so 2016 marks the first larger scale reavailability of the seed. And news is that it's already completely out at Johnny's Seed, but Robin was able to get a hefty portion. And I know other farmers were keen to get them because that's really the variety that's most desired based on the fact that it has a long harvest window. It'll just continue to be a highly productive plant over time. During the time that winter boar was unavailable, growers here were looking at any alternatives in the curly kale world. And a couple of ones that were tried out by Robin and others were a variety called Darky Boar and then a Star Boar. And the Star Boar particularly viewed as a variety that rather than multiple harvests of taking the lower leaves, that's more generally grown for just a single harvest. So you don't have that length of production in that particular bed. But both of those varieties did pretty well in her trials. And yet the Star Boar was one that has persisted in her garden and tends to be less susceptible to black fungus that would grow upon it. So we're back to the winter boar kale. That's really exciting, Robin. Thanks for sharing that news. And Sunday through Monday and Tuesday of next week, to finish up our biodynamic reading, the moon is in the fiery constellation of Leo, making it a good time to work with our fruiting plants. And recommendation could be early beans and gourds as we move into the full moon, and we want to grow gourds that are round and full like the full moon, this would be a good time to get those in as well. So thanks so much for that. And right now, we're excited to be joined on the phone by our next guest, and it's Jason Fox. Jason is an international specialist on vetiver grass installations. He's here on Kauai right now through the 19th, offering free site consultations. And let's have him fill in the rest of the information. Jason, are you with us?
I am. Hey,
fantastic.
Appreciate it.
Yes. Well, thank you as well. And I know this is maybe this is a multiple or a repeat visit to Kauai. I know you've been here at least once or twice before.
Yeah. I think maybe even 6 or 10 times or so. So, yeah, love it here. It's a second home. Got some really good Hunai family, the Browers over in Anahola. And, just out here spreading the word and trying to be a tool to the community to, perpetuate some solutions for the environment that we all want to see happen.
Excellent. And you're bringing deep knowledge on a plant that has received some attention here on the show, and certainly with growers, I'd say in the past 3 years, 4 years, you see vetiver grass being used much, much more in installations here. For people who are unfamiliar with this plant, can you give us an introduction to it?
Yeah, sure. So it's one of the oldest plants on earth. It has a 12 to 15 foot root system that's established after about a year, depending on soil type. And its main attribute with that is for soil erosion and slope stabilization. The part that I'm most passionate about that goes with that is the cleaning of water and soil, its ability to absorb phosphate and nitrate and to lock up heavy metals, antibiotics, and other toxins. Mm-hmm. So much to download in so little time, trying to get it all in there. So it's a non-invasive grass. It's the lowest rating of -8 on the invasive species scale. The USDA brought it here 25 years ago to combat soil erosion. And our company has been working with it for the past 10, installing on all the Hawaiian Islands and internationally to try to, get sustainable systems going.
Excellent. So its value in phosphate nitrate take-up, I'm always concerned I don't have enough of those in my soil, but I know that in a lot of agricultural operations, if there aren't ideal soil conditions, there's runoff or basically those nutrients applied to the soil pass by the root systems of the crop, and then if they're not captured by something, they're going to be leaching into the groundwater or aquatic environments, yes?
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, the real mission here is protect clean water. Let's have coral reefs. Let's pass on clean water to the children. That's the end goal. And, it starts with the soil. And there's a lot of different applications you can use vetiver for. And that sediment trap, it starts salt milk, obviously. And, we're kind of at the stage in the game of how far we've gone where it's nice to have something all our Makai borders protected with vetiver at this point because of, the environments that we've created above. So we're really, we love getting oceanside applications, anybody that butts up against the water because anything that's going to come down, it's going to stay out of the ocean. Same thing with streams, and that's one of the applications that I'm working on here this trip, in Lehui, just to protect a watershed, keep fertilizers and, anything which is high in NMP, nitrate and phosphate from draining in. And I got into that from being in the fish tanks, as a kid and realizing the slightest bit of increase in nitrate or phosphate will just wipe out an entire tank. So if you think about that on, the scale that we do with fertilizer or with our waste, we can really do some damage if we're not responsible about it.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. So I'm hearing about the value of vetiver grass as a component of sort of near coastal areas. Is the plant capable of withstanding any saline or more salt in the soil, or how does it do in the harsh conditions of wind and all and salt water or salt spray, I'd even say.
Sure, sure. So it's an ancient plant, and it'll create an underground indigenous microorganism, basically, is what begins to happen on these cliff faces that we plant out. So you're building and regenerating the everything underneath it, and when you do that, you'll go to a place where the salt spray's been killing something forever, and you'll see it come back to life with the vetiver because of the biology that it's creating underground. The salt spray it's not as high as something like seashore pass palum, but we use that sometimes and hand with it, or a coolie coolie grass, you know, other species that work with it. It can handle a wave here and there. It can handle some salt. It's all kind of applicable. You know, it depends on the winds and the location, things like that. So that's where, you know, we're happy to give pre-site evaluations and let you know whether, you know, vetiver is a good application there, where it's going to work best, and, you know, give you a pre-price quote on plant material, tell you how to plant it, you know, plant it for you, whatever you want. Just try to, you know, get the information out there.
Great. Fantastic. And curious, too, people are more and more interested in vetiver grass cuttings as a mulch source. It's long lasting, and curious to know if that's a utility that you recommend, or if you can lend any insight on its production use as a mulch.
It's pulling up a lot of micronutrients from the ground, you know, just like comfrey and peanut and some of these other plants that have deep root systems. This is an intertwined one, so you're going to get a lot of micronutrients. If you're on, let me finish. You'll get a lot of micronutrients, and when you put them down, the mycorrhizal of vetiver grass is extremely high, and you'll see it in a lot of when you mulch, you know, taro or your trees around it. It really helps the fungi content. You'll see the benefits from it. We do, over at Makaha Ridge, we did a reforestation with ohia and koa trees, and basically using vetiver as a groundwater recharge sediment trap to allow those trees to establish. And then once they're large, you know, the vetiver will kind of get weak from the shade. It doesn't like a full shade. And then, you know, you can restore entire areas, which is how vetiver got famous from doing that in Vanuatu. That's where the King of Thailand and the World Bank chimed in after they saw that entire island get reforested using that system. Through a colleague of mine, Don Miller, spent 7 years doing it, and it regenerated their shellfishing industry, which is what their economy relied on.
Wow.
So I got one note I skipped over was if you're using vetiver for remediation purposes, about 0.03 of the toxin is going to come back up into the leaf. So it's basically what you're doing when you're remediating or planting on anything that has like mercury, lead, arsenic, selenium, zinc, any kind of toxin, heavy metal. It's going to lock it in the root system. So it's not, and it's going to make it a less available harsh form. It's not going to destroy it, but it's going to keep it from spreading into waterways. And I wanted to make sure I referenced that as far as the mulch source, because you know, a lot of the land that we're all trying to bring life to was unfortunately came around at the point.
Yes, indeed. So, Jason, this is really exciting. We are going to be talking about mycorrhizal associations in more depth later on in the show. But I'm wondering, in the propagation of vetiver, how important it is, and do you consciously and basically colonize the root systems of the vetiver in the nursery setting before you plant them out, or does it just find that association in the native environment?
It'll find the association in the native environment. Yeah, it can thrive from pH 3 to 11. You know, you can light it on fire and it'll regenerate, which has been beneficial on large-scale planting that have unfortunately, you know, reforestation projects that have been burned down. You know, you can get a giant amount of sediment from that. So it's on its own. It's a hardy plant, and it doesn't need a lot of attention. You know, if you don't spray Roundup on it or cover it with full shade, it's going to do pretty well.
Excellent. Well, again, you're offering free consultations during your visit here to Kauai, which lasts through Friday of this week. And do you still have any availability for that?
I do. I actually will be staying longer than that, too. So I'll be here for about 2 weeks and back and forth. It's my second home. You know, our main farm is on Hilo. And like I said, my Hanai family is over in Honolulu. So I'm in and out a lot and, you know, always happy to drive along the beautiful coast and talk story about vetiver. And, yeah, when I'm not on a time rush, too,
great.
More enjoyable. I really appreciate you having me on the show, though, to spread the word. It means a lot to me. And, you know, this has been a passion of mine for 10 years, and I'm really excited to now get the word out and have support. So thank you very much.
Sounds really great. Looking forward to getting you either on the show again for a longer conversation, as well as potentially assisting you in teaching a workshop sometime in the future would be really great. And
yeah.
For people who are interested in being in touch with you, can we have your contact information?
Yeah. It's my direct cell phone is 808-756-8725. And our website is vetiver, V-E-T-I-V-E-R, Farms Hawaii. com, and you can also type that in Instagram or Facebook. I think Facebook, the Vetiver Solution is the name of the page. And it has all our work and pictures and a lot more information on there. And we're a licensed landscape contract company, so we're bonded, insured, and ready to go with you know, any kind of installations or applications anybody's interested in. And really hoping to somebody from Pioneer and those guys on the west side are listening, because you know, it mean a lot to all of our hearts, I think, to be able to plant some grass that's going to heal the soil out there, and you know, along with the rest of this beautiful island.
Excellent. Well, I hope they are listening as well, and let's make an effort to connect your solutions with their need.
Yeah,
appreciate it. And
yeah.
So, thank you so much, Jason. We'll look forward to seeing you soon here on Kauai.
Right on. Have a great day, man.
All right. Thank you so much. Jason Fox, bringing the miracles of vetiver grass to our agricultural systems as well as our coastal conservation projects. Very exciting. Right now, I want to let you know you're listening to In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. We're here until 1 o'clock. We're here to discuss agriculture, opportunities here on Kauai, the flourishing of all things that grow well, that feed and nourish our body, and the health of the soil here, the health of the environment. And some of these things can get put together quickly, and other things take quite a while to come to fruition, but they're all worthwhile. And I'm excited to have an in-studio guest we've been looking forward to having on the show for some time. He's a very engaged individual and a very knowledgeable. It's great to have Yoshito Lot with us. Yoshito, originally from Geneva, Switzerland, Yosh came to the islands in 1990 and to Kauai in 91, beginning his agricultural endeavors with the Akana family growing papayas. Yosh moved to Hilo in 1994, where he met his wife Jennifer, and is now blessed. They are blessed with three children. Yosh has lived in Kalihiwai for the last 7 years. He's the president of the Kilauea Neighborhood Association and now also serves as the executive director of Aina Ho'okupu, which stewards the Kilauea Community Agricultural, the Kilauea Community Agricultural Center, formerly the Kilauea Ag Park. I hope I got all those details right, but at any rate, it's super to have Yosh with us. Welcome, Yosh.
Hello.
So we've been tracking the developments here of the Kilauea Ag Park, and it's really exciting to actually be able to go out there and see that it has begun in grand fashion. 10 acres of land already cleared, and some really strong some strong plans already in the works. And it's really exciting to have you here to tell us more about it.
Oh, Mahalo for having me. Yes, we're very excited to see all this progress taking place. Everybody's been very supportive and enthusiastic with the change. We are actually, I'm just going to throw it out there now, we're having a community meeting this Friday on February 19th at 6 p.m. at the Kilauea School Cafeteria. where we will be presenting the draft plans that we've created for the farmers market area, as well as explaining some of the different projects that will be part of this site. The reason why it was named as an agricultural center was to really broaden the scope of possibilities that the site can offer by nurturing not only the plants, but actually the people who will be growing the plants. We're hoping to provide us a place for people to engage in farming and being able to basically support that interest to turn it into hopefully a profession. So we're excited to provide this. This 10 acres is actually part of phase one, which we initiated the beginning of last year with the help and the support of the county and Bernard Carvalho, the mayor, as well as George Costa at OED, been instrumental in supporting this community effort. And I need to point that out, that this has been 30 years and I'm just one little person in a long chain of people that have definitely supported and carried this project through. It was initially part of a Seacliff subdivision SMA regulation that they needed to provide land for, at the time, the Kilauea community, the lack of economy on the North Shore, and providing a space for the now retired or out of a job sugarcane workers, and providing an environment where they can farm. So those efforts have been blocked many times, and fortunately for Kilauea, it has pukka through this time. And I want to emphasize the Kilauea community part of the title, because this is for this community, and we will make sure that the site will provide food and opportunities for the people that live in Kilauea. So, and the North Shore, I mean, you know. But we want to focus and prioritize the people from Kilauea, but it is for everybody on the North Shore as well as the rest of the island.
Right. And I love that emphasis, because it's not exclusive, but it really is honoring the fact that in order for us to have sustainable agricultural systems, they have to be localized. They have to represent the needs of the local community, and it's best if that food is traveling as few miles from the source of where it was grown. It's important that the farmers who are farming are driving as short a distance to get to their farmland to produce it, and keeping all that stuff localized. And it's not that it's about Kilauea only having this opportunity, but that it can be an example, and really in the future, hopefully ag parks like this could be in all of the Moku, at least, if not every Ahupua'a having.
Absolutely. It's definitely, we're very fortunate here in Kilauea to have so many pieces of a very complex puzzle to realize a project like this. And we are hopeful that we'll be successful, and that success will be resonating throughout every Ahupua'a in the islands, for sure.
Now, this is not the first county in the state of Hawaii. This is not the only county ag park, I'm gathering. They have them at least in Waimea on the Big Island. And I'm wondering if you, in your preparatory phase, if you had a look at some of the existing one or ones to see how they're working, how they're not working.
Absolutely. I took a trip that was offered with OED that took one of our council person, John Yukimura, along with us, and we went, well, I was the guest, really, but I was invited to go with them to visit on Oahu, the Kunia Ag Park. There's a couple of ag parks over there. Then we went to Molokai and saw the Molokai one, as well as the next day to Maui. Earlier, 6 months before that, I got to go to Big Island and also talk to the lady that was in charge of the Honokaa one, and learned and seen how each one has evolved, how each one is very unique, and the history of each one bringing lessons to what to do and what not to do. So it was very interesting that in Kula Maui, one of the big problems, they had a flood, and the one organic farmer on their site got polluted by all her neighbors and sued the county and won. Mm. So one of the advice from Ken in Maui was maybe don't mix the two. So I know it's it's a big discussion, so I'm not going to go further into
they
that.
Probably, they did. They probably didn't have a really thick border of vetiver grass planted between the two sites.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
And also the one from Big Island is the fact that they finally hired somebody part-time to manage their ag park, and that's when it finally started to get some structure and be able to include new farmers and start growing again because it was very stagnant. Mm. So luckily we created Ainaho Kupu. We got support from county and from the state to help, but mostly from our neighbors to help fund my position, which has been, I think, key to making things happen that quickly, to be able to dedicate all my time to a project like this one is vital for the sake of moving forward, because politics and government is not something that moves very fast. Mm. So if somebody's not pushing, usually doesn't move at all.
Right, right. I know one of the big milestones for your project as well was receiving the 501c3 nonprofit status, which makes Aina Ho'okupu available to receive tax-deductible donations. And that's really exciting when we have a community project like this that means so much to so many people, that there's that maximum opportunity for people to contribute. And if we have listeners right now who are interested in contributing to the program, what sort of invitation can we give them?
I would encourage them to, we have a website, which is ainahokupu.org. Which speaks to some of the plans that happened, some of the updates and reports. I am not savvy in computer world, so I'm not the one with the Facebook page and the fancy phone and all this other stuff. So we're probably lagging in that place. Don't get to check it too often, but I would encourage anybody who's interested to learn more to come on Friday at 6 p.m. at the cafeteria, the Kilauea School. There will be a full rundown of what has happened for the last year, including all the drawings and everything. And yes, it is a community effort. We need everybody's participation, that it be monetary or volunteer time or work. This is what's going to make the community. So we need input. We want you guys to be involved. Mm-hmm. And hopefully this site will provide something that makes your life a better life.
I'm sure it will. So this Kilauea Agricultural Center, I'm getting the title down in my head here, I'm sorry. But at any rate, the Kilauea Community Agricultural Center that's coming online, for people who are interested in coming, and just to entice them with just a bit of the detail without giving everything away, but also for people who may not be available to go to the meeting, in this first phase of actual implementation of growing plants, what are the major components and how does it look like they're going to be implemented?
Yeah, very good. The initial phase of phase one was determined because we have a restriction as far as the water availability for the site. We have 5 water meters that are going to be installed in the next couple of weeks that will provide enough water to basically irrigate the first 7.5 acres. Out of the 10 acres, there's 2.5 acres of a farmer's market area that we wish to create, a couple of covered spaces where the farmers will be able to come and pull up their trucks, unload their produce on tables, and not have to do the whole setup that they have to go through. That was one of the desires from the counties, to make sure that the Sunshine Market from the Kilauea gym be relocated on that site. And that is the reason why we have made plans to provide that space for the farmers, as well as a public bathroom. So, yes, you're hearing me right. we're going to be providing a public restroom, which is so it's so needed in Kilauea. It's not even funny. So definitely we are going to be looking for funds. So this is some of the draft plans that we'll be presenting on Friday, and I will be putting them on the website as well, to get and gather input from people so we can start going through permitting and creating a baseline of cost of what the different structure will cost, and start fundraising towards that goal. We also have 2.5 acres of community gardens, which will be managed. Basically, half of it will be individual plots for people who want to do their own thing. But the second half is actually a new concept that I'm starting to call a CSIA. CSI sounds sexy and all that. But basically what it is a CSA farm, which is a community-supported agriculture. However, it's also implemented by the community. So it's a community supported and implemented agriculture. The idea behind that is because of the financial viability of farms, 90% more of the farms, commercial farms on the North Shore, have to export everything that they have because Kauai is too small to answer to the production that's taking place on even on their small farms. In thinking about that, it was really sad to think the site would just be used to grow produce that we would be shipping out. So it was important to find a space for the community to benefit from growing those produce. The concept behind it is to identify 30 to 40 families that will sign up and dedicate on 6 months interval 4 hours a week of volunteer labor, along with a nominal $10 fee, which will help pay for the position of the farm supervisor. There'll be a farm supervisor that will lay out chores, lay out harvesting schedule, planting schedule, all the logistics that goes into running a farm, so that each of the participants will be able to take home a box of produce twice a week that should feature around 10 different produce. We will provide greenhouse space, so things like tomatoes, cucumbers, zucchinis will be part of those boxes on a weekly basis, and it will probably provide, if we do a whole acre, it will probably provide for another 30 to 40 families that might be able to just buy into the system. So they would pay more money because they don't have to do the labor part, but they will also be benefiting from the produce there. The concept behind that is that we'll be providing organic produce to the community regardless of their income. And that's a very important point, because as soon as we enter the marketplace, we go into the stores, we have to compete with the rest distribution and so on and so forth, which makes the price of organic produce just out of reach. So we want to avoid that, and giving the opportunity, granted you have to work and dedicate yourself, make that commitment, you'll be able to get those produce just by showing up. And if you have a family of four, you have two adults, if you show up for 2 hours, that's your four-hour commitment. So it's really not meant to burden people, but it is meant to provide an opportunity.
You're listening to In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. We're here until 1 o'clock. We have Yoshito Lot in studio. He's the executive director of Aina Ho'okupu, a new 501c3 nonprofit organization that has taken the helm and are forwarding the stewardship of the Kilauea Community Agricultural Park. And so we're talking about organic food being available for people in a couple of different innovative ways in which they can be involved in its production, supporting either through their own labor and as well having it grown for them. And then I know a third major component is putting half-acre plots into production, and that a really important goal for you is showing that agriculture showing to all of us, really, that doing this business of agriculture can be financially sustainable. And like you said, it's more of a challenge for organic growers in some aspects or in some implementations, but I think that there is a big misunderstanding, perhaps. I'm hoping it's a misunderstanding that organic agriculture cannot be profitable. I know that's something you've been looking at, Yosh, and I'm wondering from what you've been sort of assessing in other people's operations, if we do look to commodity crops, if you will, organic commodity crops, is it truly a misunderstanding that you can't make money growing organic here on Kauai?
Well, I don't think it's clear that you can make money organic farming. I just want to clarify that Aina Hokupu just personally decided to do the maintenance of the site with an organic approach, but we're not limited or bound of putting ourselves in any kind of box. We are supportive of all agriculture. We need to keep in mind that the rural character of our place is because we have open spaces and we have ag. So this site is meant to bring people together. It is not meant to put anybody down, to try to create any kind of strife. It was very interesting that the majority of the farmers that I have been in contact with and I have approached on the North Shore are organic farmers. And in this initial phase of the half-acre lots, we've spent over $250,000. By the time the water system comes in, it's going to be $375,000. It's a lot of money to spend. So the board felt that it's a good approach to bank on the solid winners, which is our already successful farmers. So the first year or two, as we put the selection process in place and as we get more water to open up more land, we're inviting farmers to demonstrate what they do already. And I think it's not so much that organic farming is not able to make money. I think farming is not able to make money because of where we live and the conditions that we have. And that's what this center is supposed to provide, is support for wannabe farmers, that it be financially, that it be with marketing, that it would be with experience, packaging, being able to follow the new regulations that the federal government has put on all the farmers. Those are the part and the pieces that we want to bring to the table so that the farmer can just farm. It doesn't have to be a marketer. It doesn't have to be a scientist. It doesn't have to be all these other things that today are required to be a successful farmer. So to answer your question, it was interesting to find that the majority of the farmers on the North Shore, except the taro growers, have done well for themselves, I believe. They're making good money, but they had to become organic because they have to be specialized. And I think that is something that's a reoccurring thing. All the big farms, all the people that are trying to compete with this worldwide market, this year have just folded. And we had the last sugarcane farm go down. Richard Haas stopped growing bananas on the Big Island. The flowers business are struggling in Big Island. The papaya guys as well. It's a really tough environment because we have to ship everything in, labor is very costly, and then we have to ship everything out. So we're in a very peculiar situation, but I look at Japan as being in a similar situation, even though they're a lot larger than us. They have specialized their crops. They have marketed their crops to become the best of the best. And today, you see Ryu beef, you see a variety of innovations that Japanese have created to keep their farming alive, as well as all the subsidies from the government, as well as all the support that is available to them. So this is the direction we need to look at ag if we want to see ag on the North Shore. And I can't emphasize, even the seed companies, they don't grow corn to go sell to feed cattle. They grow the seed for the seed. It's like the most specialized, exclusive, valuable part of their operation that's taking place here. Why? Because it costs so much money to create it here. So in that perspective, I think if we pursue and really support people, the specialty markets is going to be the way to answer to success and financial success here on the North Shore.
Excellent. Well, I commend you on your work, on the breadth of your vision of erecting a really big tent that makes everybody welcome to come in, the innovations, the experimental design of this agricultural park for Kilauea, I think is going to inspire people locally, regionally, and beyond. And it's very exciting that you're making this opportunity available to us here. So thank you so much. And again, community meeting happening this Friday at 6 p.m. at the Kilauea Elementary School Cafeteria. To find out a lot more information in detail, no doubt you'll have maps, diagrams that people can see, the layout. And of course, there's the site itself. Is there an opportunity through time for people to come out and actually step onto the land and see it with their own eyes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anybody's welcome to contact me. I'm on the website. My phone number is 937-8646, and I'm happy to, you know, to take anybody on site. And I really encourage everybody. This is your community. This is your backyard, so get involved and hopefully we see you Friday.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Yosh.
Mahalo. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely.
All right.
Hope you'll stick around for the rest of the show. We might jump back into some more discussions. But right now, I want to encourage people to stay tuned here on KKCR for lots of great programming coming up in this Wednesday, starting off with Kauai Vibrations with Tracy, starting from 1 to 3, Shaka Kayaka from 3 to 5 with the Pupule Show, and Scott Majaris with Kauai Surf Stories after that. And then the music comes in again, Shaka Kayaka and Tracy, of course, music heavy on their shows as well. So we'll keep you informed. We'll keep you entertained. Keep it locked into KKCR and visit our website, kkcr.org, for more in-depth information, meet the DJs, and grow in your appreciation. Even leave us a donation would be super cool as well. So we're delighted right now to be joined, a bit of a surprise, but delighted surprise that Tammy Davis is back in studio with us. Tammy gave just a superb workshop on mushroom cultivation a couple of weekends ago up there at the Kauai Food Forest, and we had a super time, great turnout, and I'm very excited to say that the mushroom culture that I walked away with is running. The mycelium is running, and it's got my mind racing about all the great mushrooms that are going to be part of my breakfasts, lunches, and dinners in the months to come. So, Tammy, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you, Paul.
So, what did you think of the workshop?
I was excited. It was amazing how many people came. I was actually a little surprised, and excuse me. So it was a lot of people, and they were very enthusiastic. They asked really good questions. I like it when everyone catches fire with the passion for fungi that I have, and so I'm hoping that several other people have their cultures that they were taking home on cardboard, and that they're able to learn how to run the mycelium on the cardboard and just get really good at that. That's a really good skill for a lot of people on our island to have, mm-hmm. in order to propagate the easiest ones first and then start moving into some of the, you know, maybe a little bit more challenging ones, and so that we'll have an abundance of opportunities to use fungi in our ecosystem here.
Yes, and we, not surprisingly, have had a number of people contact us either because they were unavailable on that day or because we pretty much sold out our tickets. And I know I'm hopeful that you would consider doing a follow-up workshop sometime soon while you're still available for such things.
Yeah,
so I'm
going to
put a little friendly pressure on you for that.
Nothing like on the spot. No, I definitely felt after the workshop was over and I had a little time to consider what I would do different and what I would act like to add on and what kind of supplies I would like to have, I would be excited to do another one. And I have also had a few people come and say, I missed it. I want to come next time. So let's do it again.
Good. Excellent. Well, it's auspicious that you step into the studio as well, too, because to round up our show today, I did a little bit of investigation from I pull resources off of the internet, and oftentimes they're papers that I kind of never get around to reading until the time allows. But you certainly piqued my interest in mushrooms, and the idea of having them to eat is great. And then we also learned through your super slideshow about all of the ecological services that the mushrooms provide, not just their fruiting bodies, but their mycelial network, the information sharing and nutrient sharing web of life that exists underneath the soils. And I cropped up a really nice paper from my digital bookshelf inside my computer. And so I thought I could take time to sort of condense or give people that Cliff Notes version of what I got out of this great publication, and encourage people to have a look at the College of Tropical Agriculture's publications. There are so many amazing free resources available on the internet, and if I have a particular area of interest in the agricultural world, I will often put a couple of keywords, but then I will put the word sitar. And that's spelled C-T-A-H-R, which stands for the College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources. And that will put to the top of the search results papers that are specific to, or research that is specific to, the Hawaiian Islands. And because of our particular soil types, our climate, the preference of particular crops that are grown here, techniques that work well here, turning to sitar as one of the first resources can be one of the most valuable ways to go. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a book report here, and feel free to chime in at any time. But I was looking at a particular publication. It's called Arbuscular Mycorrhizas, Producing and Applying Arbuscular Mycorrhizal Inoculum, by authors Haupt and Osorio, Department of Tropical Plant and Soil Sciences at the University of Hawaii, sitar. The publication published in 2001. So what did we learn? Most plants in the natural habitats function under the influence of a special group of soil fungi known as arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi. And the arbuscular refers to particular structures within the network called arbuscles, which either are storage organelles, or they can also be used for reproduction. This particular group of mycorrhizal fungi are of the endomycorrhizal type, which mean endo meaning inside. And so what actually happens is that when the mycorrhiza infects, is the term that's used, the plant roots, even though it's a good infection, the body of the mushroom actually goes into a couple of layers into the root itself.
And we did find other evidence that, and I would love to cite a paper, but I don't have that quite at my fingertips, but that there's actually communication between the mycorrhizal, the thread, and the cell wall of the plant, and the plant actually like opens its gate. So there's actually a little permission happening there.
Yes, I love that. And in fact, most plant families, only 30 plant families are excluded from plants that either have a obligate or necessary association of this mycorrhiza, or sometimes it's, I suppose, voluntary. It either could be there or not, but many plants really, really require it. And the most important thing for us to consider, I thought, from the paper, is that these arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi, or AMFs as they are termed, is their ability to increase the uptake of phosphorus. Also copper and zinc, but phosphorus being an extremely limited element in our soil, highly bound up in combination with aluminum and magnesium. No, that's not right. Aluminum and iron. So they're tightly bound, and plants really need phosphorus to grow in a healthy way. It's one of the macronutrients. Mycorrhizas' ability can be can increase a plant's ability to receive this phosphorus by 40 times
if
it was not inoculated. And the mycorrhiza, in association with roots, increases the ability of the root itself to reach the nutrients by up to 100 times. So it's a massive difference. And so we often think, well, if we are going to be maybe nurturing a plant or establishing a plant, that if we just take soil from a healthy plant and maybe throw it in our nursery pot in what would otherwise be considered sterile media, but that we're inoculating it, that that would be sufficient. But it turns out, based on their research, that this soil inoculum, just dug from the soil, is very ineffective. And part of that is because of our heavy clay soils, that it's just not an effective mechanism for doing that. So there are other methods that are described within this paper. Root inoculum is one of the really effective ways, and that's essentially growing a host plant in a media, inoculating it, and then as the mycorrhizal association expands with the expanding root system, that you then harvest those roots and you can use that as an inoculum. But that takes some handling considerations, drying it at the proper heat, and assuring that you have the proper moisture levels and storage conditions. So really the most useful way to do it, if you are trying to inoculate a large field, because it takes a lot of inoculum to do a whole field, it seems the best way to inoculate your field is to grow seedlings in the nursery, inoculate them, and then when you transplant them, they will spread the mycorrhiza throughout the system. The researchers looked at a variety of different host plants, and there are some of the plants that we are either familiar with as weeds or plants that we do actually cultivate. And of the ones they looked at, the most effective were Bermuda grass. They looked at corn was one of the most successful, as well as our beloved Sesbania grandiflorum. So our agati, or the Ojai Keokeo nitrogen-fixing tree. The recommendation as well was to use a plant as dissimilar as possible as your nurse plant to the plant you're actually trying to grow, because then the likelihood of transferring disease or other pathogens or pests from your inoculant seedlings to the host plant would be minimized as well. And it said as well that peat moss is not a particularly good medium for growing this mycorrhizal fungi, which was interesting because some of the soilless media that we buy in the shops here that says it's inoculated with mycorrhiza has peat as its number one ingredient. One of the things that it did recommend using was basalt dust. And so the blue rock dust that we can get down at Halfway Bridge or the quarry here, which has the interesting name of man sand, but that man sand is actually quite useful, in especially when it's in association with some soil. So the combination of those two provides a good medium. Tammy was asking me about coconut coir. The paper did not research coconut coir, and I was left with the same question of whether or not that would be successful. And fallowing a field can greatly decrease the AMF population of the soil. So if you have a garden, it's best to continue cover cropping. Otherwise, you're going to have to re-inoculate the whole field. It really dies out unless it has that host growing. Plenty of laboratory techniques are given for actually creating inoculums, but I think that just from a practical standpoint, and based on their recommendations, the easiest way for us to do it is to get a reliable starter culture from a certified laboratory that does this, inoculate our seedlings, Sesbania grandiflora. If you don't have seeds, we'll have them at the seed exchange coming up on March 13th. And as well, you could experiment, I suppose, with guinea grass, but unlike vetiver, it's a rapid expanding weed. And certainly, they only looked at a number of host species. Maybe vetiver or other plants that are less invasive could also be very valuable for
I would be shocked if Vetiver didn't have an amazing mycorrhizal associate, because its roots are already so amazing and it has so many great benefits and the erosion control and soil and being a filter. And so all those things that we were looking for, those functions, I think Vetiver would just be an amazing candidate.
Yes, and indeed we just spoke with Jason Fox on the show and he was speaking to that as well as many of his other benefits. So mycorrhizal associates, it'll be interesting to do some more experiments or research, but it's kind of one of those things where it can't hurt, and if you're doing nursery propagation, having some good inoculum sounds like it could be, makes a tremendous difference, and that we cannot depend on our current Kauai agricultural soils to inoculate the trees or other plants that we're putting into our agricultural system. We need to keep inoculating with really strong inoculum available commercially that we can expand through nursery production.
Yeah, I think that's the key, is that we're regenerating, and that's, I think that's part of your mission, is to be a regenerator. We've got some catch-up work to do and to really get back to a vibrant living ecosystem where we can produce plenty of food and have it be sustainable. We need to put those inputs in because they've been so robbed for so long, and a lot of the soils are, you know, probably at the bottom of the ocean at this point. So
yes.
I think that's part of and we used to have access to an 808 mix, it was called. It had some locally specific mycorrhizal associates in the mix, and unfortunately that store is not available anymore. That product isn't available. So if anyone knows of, you know, any good resources for getting some inoculated mycorrhizal inoculants, let's find out and then tell everybody.
Great. I know that I have resourced it from Peaceful Valley Garden Supply. There are restrictions, but there are some that seem to be approved for shipment to Hawaii. Yeah. And so some products are available through them, and certainly an internet search would reveal more sources as well. Mm-hmm. So we have time only for a few announcements. We want to let you know that Regenerations Botanical Garden is proud to present an AVA workshop. That's Kava Kava with Gary Mack. Sunday, February 28th from 9:30 till noon. This will be at the Kalihiwai Community Garden, part of the Malama Kauai Community Farm. We'll be harvesting, cleaning, preparing, and propagating AVA. And we're encouraging people to have a look at our website, currently down, but we'll be up soon. A little bit of a database error going on. But go to ribg.org for more information. That workshop coming up Sunday, February 28th. We do have the 16th Kauai Community Seed and Plant Exchange Sunday, March 13th from noon to 5. Entertainment including Ku Halalea, starring Kaimi and Dell from the group Ku Halalea, will be performing the Sacred Earth Choir, Tangled Roots, and many more. We have expanded vendor opportunities, and we're excited to have Gray back again from the Po'oku Community Garden. He'll be sharpening tools again this year, lots of food booths, and lots of different vendors, but we still have a little bit of room left and a little bit of time left to get you set up as a vendor at the event. So if you want more information, if you're interested in becoming a vendor for the event, please be in touch with Krista at 741-0112. We're also seeking 20 by 20 or larger tents at Aninaho. Great facilities there, but we need to expand the facilities with some tents, depending on what the weather does to us. So if you have access to or can help us with a donation so we can get a larger event tent for more room for our great community event, we sure would welcome it. And again, the number to call, 741-0112. Aninaho Community Park is holding a free community movie, Fern Gully, which people really enjoy. I know people, it's sort of a cult film following there for that particular film. It's happening Friday, February 26th from 6:30 to 9 p.m. there at Aninaho Community Park, home of Kauai Mini Golf.
And happy birthday, Paul.
Oh.
All right, happy birthday. That's why I dropped by to bring you a treat.
Thank you so very much. I feel it. I feel the love for sure. Just to finish off our announcements, Kauai Nursery and Landscaping holding a free workshop in association with Kauai Invasive Species Committee and rolling out their Grow Pono program. This workshop at Kauai Nursery, February 27th from 9 to 10 a.m. And good golly, so many more. I'm going to have to hold off the rest of our announcements until next week, but it's been superb spending the hour with you. Thanks so much for tuning in, and thank you so much to our in-studio guest, Yoshito Lotz, and his project can be viewed at ainahookupu.org. And again, the Kilauea Community Agricultural Center meeting happening this Friday, February 19th at 6 p.m. at the Kilauea School Cafeteria. We also want to thank Jason Fox, a specialist on vetiver grass installations, and he's available for free consultations here. You can get information about his work at vetiverfarmshawaii.com or give him a call at 808-756-8725 to make your appointment. Thanks for tuning in to In the Garden on the Farm, and please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on a relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha. You're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa. Stay tuned for Kauai Vibration.